Nah,
you don't think Kanye opened for Jay-Z?
No.
You don't think he
Kanye
would?
Doesn't? He did. He Kanye doesn't. He you don't open for anybody when you're Kanye. That hurts your brand.
Who does Beyonce open up for?
Nobody.
No right. one.
Absolutely no one.
Right. There's a level you can reach where you don't open up for anybody. I don't foresee myself ever reaching that level.
I'm not opening up. Never at that.
You are what? Who?
I'm actually trying to. I'm like, please.
I'm going to open up for you.
Who? George Lopez? Yeah, I'll open up for George Lopez.
Man.
I'm trying to open up some Christian artists.
Martin now? Current Martin? Yeah, I'll open up for current
you're
Martin.
That. Right. You're better than that.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Don't let Satan deceive you. You're better than that.
Nah, but there's certain artists like. Yeah, there's a
like D1,
people.
You say no.
God, stop, bro. Stop it.
Good people, what's going on? We back yet again, 3 weeks in a row. Don't get used to it. Don't get used to it. But we here. Off the record, my name is Adon Bean, and I have the, as you can see, the lovely, as you can hear, the lovely cast of characters, the ones you have grown to appreciate and love. To my right, I have Mr. Dan Duncan. What up, sir?
I'm here, man. I'm here. It's good to be here.
It's good to see you in your pale face. Happy to see you.
I'm representing.
Yes.
Three brothers and one white dude.
That's what's
is
up.
Is that the name we're going with?
We're just rolling with it. Bucking the line that you just heard just now. Is,
sorry, it's changed. Just trying to catch up, guys.
Is the one and only. The prodigal son has returned.
Oh, amen.
Hey, man, I heard y'all talking a lot of noise.
If you're not here, don't get angry.
I can't help it that I'm out here trying to get it.
I see the governor himself, David Perdue, who's been getting text messages or emails.
It goes down to my DMs.
It goes down in your DMs.
It goes down to my DMs.
People think you are the former governor of.
No, it's the current senator.
The current senator. I'm so sorry.
Current
senator
of Georgia.
Of Georgia, yes. Mr. David Perdue.
I'm not. I don't even own cowboy boots. You know what I'm saying? Or jean jacket or any of that.
That's what's up.
Anyway, yeah, man, I'm happy to be here, man. Y'all can cut all that noise y'all was talking about once a year. Shout out to Yvette, though, man, holding it down. She's great. I get why y'all like her more than me.
She is awesome.
She's awesome. She's but, you know, what am I, chopped liver? Like, I'm all right.
Man, we're happy to see you, man. Yeah. We're really happy
to see you. At least you're not John Parker.
Man.
Oh, man. I like JP. Where he been at?
Yeah, he
doing
gone.
His own thing.
He got okay, that well, one year old. You know, JP, you know, he got to live his life.
He, like, went into the mist or the what's the place in Stranger Things, the upside down. John's in the upside down.
You know,
y'all met the teacher from Stranger Things the other day, the science dude.
Oh, word?
Yeah,
oh, really?
I was at a show and I was like, man, you look familiar. And then somebody's like, man, he's a Stranger Things. I was like, yo, you the teacher, dude. You the science dude.
He looked like he's that same dude.
Right.
Like,
yeah, he was real low key. You know what I mean? I was just like, you all right, man. And the first thing I said, they ain't even kill you. Come back in season two. Like, I was excited for him. Like, you're not even dead.
Yeah, he looks like they interrupted his actual classroom to film that.
Like, what are these cameras here?
Can I get back to
trying
my lesson?
Trying to explain photosynthesis.
They were scouting locations, and they're like, will work.
Went to an actual science lab.
He's that dude.
Oh my God!
Yeah, happy to be here, man. That's what's up. Talking noise, I got you know.
Yeah.
Live my life, man.
Hey, we just happy to see you. We only give you
stop being so famous, man.
I'm trying to be more famous. This might be it, people.
We don't get back to that. We're gonna get back to that.
Would you like to just go ahead and pub?
Okay.
You might. I'm shamelessly pubbing everything.
Please do it right now.
No, I'm gonna wait though. I got patience.
All right, that other voice that you hear is the lovely, the wonderful, the amazing, the talented, the effervescent.
More of it. More. I take it all.
We can be more. Show Baraka. What's going on, sir?
I take it all. I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Happy.
Good. I accept you.
Blessings. Blessings. Yes. Blessings.
You're welcome. For my
you should be honored by my lateness.
I just had a vision of Show being the Pope, just walking down the aisle and just blessings to you.
Yeah,
so you'd be a dope Pope.
I think I would.
Hey, I think you'd be a dope Pope. Show the Pope. Show Pope.
Show Pope.
I'll be very generous.
That's Pope what's up,
the blessings.
So, because we've been here for a minute, we generally know what we've been up to. Show got this album that's releasing sometime. Sometime.
Can you give us a release date?
No, not
did y'all
yet.
Drop it yet?
No.
Okay. All right. Dan is out here doing these one-off projects for amazing organizations and companies and shooting.
Staying up 24 hours editing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, no sleep.
Working, grinding, man.
Yeah.
Telling stories, changing the world.
That's what's up.
It's been fun, man. It's been a grind.
I find out that via Instagram where Dan is in the country. Pretty much.
Absolutely. I'm like, I log into Instagram in Rome today.
Dan got here real quick, too. Like, you be on a podcast with him on Tuesday. How you get across the world all of a done. I just seen you. You ain't ask nobody. You ain't ask nobody to check your mail. You just gone,
right? Who's feeding Marley right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, where the dog at? Do you have nothing going on? Right.
Absolutely.
One day it'll be like, yo, come on over. We watching college football.
Yeah, today. Like real domestic. They can hear like, and then right. Next thing you know, man, stamps on the passport. I'm like, yeah,
just pyramids
we in
the
Vancouver
background.
Today. We yeah. In Vancouver. Just kidding.
Is that the Eiffel Tower?
Like, this crazy.
I don't know what to say, guys.
That's what's
up. It ain't been 5 hours. What you got?
I'm just saying. That private jet is nice, bro.
Yeah. Speed of sound.
But nonetheless, man, Mr. David Perdue, you, sir.
Yeah.
You got some news. You got some things that are happening, a little bit going on here and there. I hear you might be on something.
Yeah, man. October 2nd, 11:30 p.m. on Comedy Central.
Yo, it's too far. It's too far. You say, when you say October 2nd, it sounds like it's far away.
It is
it's
this
actually
Sunday.
Not. There you go. That's there the best
this
way to
Sunday,
say it.
Heart of the City on Comedy Central.
11:30 p.m.
So okay. All y'all probably gonna TiVo it or whatever or record it. DVR.
Now is this the first TiVo, episode like, or is this the second?
We are the premiere episode. Which means they said, look,
all right,
we gonna sell this show.
Yeah,
and this is how we gonna sell it.
So they went to Atlanta. This goes to different cities.
It goes to different city. We weren't the first city that they filmed, but
right.
We were the premiere
but
episode.
They were like, yo, we gotta
we like what they did there.
Yeah,
and so now I'm just waiting to see how they edit it.
Already filming yourself. Just
yeah.
A little bit.
Oh, am I? What? First of all, hold on. Let me. Can Young Pimpin' brag a minute?
Yes, yeah. By all means.
Comedy Central. That's Sunday. I don't know if I'm on the cover, but I'm definitely in this latest Atlanta creative loafing. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just had a bunch of pictures taken last week, and then somebody put them on Facebook wall today. I don't know if they said I was on the cover. I want to be on the cover just because friend of the show Rob Hayes is on the cover, and I don't want to not. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's competition.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be just in there. You know.
Yeah.
So I'm there, and then November 4th, I'm on your TV again.
What?
On Fuse Network.
What?
A show called Uproarious.
I'm gonna have to upgrade my digital package.
It'll be online.
Yeah, I don't know if I get Fuse, but I'll figure that out.
But Comedy Central.
Get that one.
I lead with Comedy Central. October 2nd, Heart of the City, 11:30 p.m.
Heart of the City, it sounds like that's connected to a famous comedian.
It is connected to the Kevin Hart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was crazy. It was crazy is y'all gonna see me in Magic City. That's
nice.
What's crazy.
Nice.
Just letting you know right now.
Yeah.
Just be prepared.
Yeah, spoiler. I'm in Magic City. Right. They're going to have some real weird pictures of me up in Magic City.
Okay.
That's
so,
what's up.
But hey, I'm happy.
Do we have a hashtag settled for what we're going to tweet? Because we are live tweeting.
Y'all heard about this guy.
We want to live tweet.
Do or dud.
Do or dud. Why do you think it's going to be bad?
I don't. I know it's going to be good.
No, I don't know if I can commit to 11:30 live tweeting.
I don't know if, honestly, people ask me, where you watching it? And I'm like,
show's already backing out.
Yeah, I was like,
real talk. Everybody's asking me where I'm watching it. And I know there's like some kind of like watch party for like people who've been on it.
Yeah.
I don't even know I'm going to be there. I don't know if I want to watch it. I don't know how I feel. Like, I'd rather just like be hidden somewhere and then find it later. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how they edit it. That's what's wrong with TV. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
I just know I felt good about it when I was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they add laugh tracks to it, I'm fine with that. If they made me look stupid, I'm going to find people.
I can't speak for you, Joe, but I think we've all had shows where we remember killing it. And then there's some footage that might come out. It don't sound like I'm killing it. Like, it felt like I was killing
it.
And I could understand that.
I felt good. The crazy thing is, this is the thing nobody's going to know. Is that they didn't want me on the show?
Mm-hmm.
From what I thought, right?
Yeah.
So the day before it taped, I get a text message and the dude asked me, "Hey man, are you sure you can handle a crowded Uptown?" They were trying to pull me from the show, like I couldn't handle black people,
right?
Like I'm not black,
right?
Like I ain't grow up on the South Side,
yeah.
Like I ain't go to Morehouse, like
yeah.
I, you know what I mean? Like,
uh-huh.
And they was like, and I almost lost that whole spot because I darn near cussed that dude out via text. What you mean? Can I handle black people? Like, it got intense. And yeah, so
why do you think that was? Like, do you think they viewed you as a black comedian who caters to white audiences?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. They were.
Are you a black comedian that caters to white audiences?
I call it a missionary. You call it what you want. I'm a missionary. Everybody want to go to Africa. I'm trying to go to the birds.
You try to fight our cause, bro.
I'm speaking a good word of equality and Black Lives Matter and all of that stuff.
Somebody got to.
Yeah, everybody else want to leave.
That's important to put out there, though.
You know, I'm a missionary. I'm to white people. I really am.
I like it too. I like it, bro.
Because yeah. I've seen these movements, and they're like, "Let's go to Detroit." I'm like, "Man, y'all need to go to Marietta. Y'all need to go. Y'all need to go to Smyrna."
Somebody got
to
hit up John's Creek.
Somebody got to hit up John's Creek. You know, so yeah, they definitely were like, they were weird about it. They were like, "Man, we seen your tape. We don't know if you can, if you gonna be all right in this crowd. What was weird though is my first time ever at Uptown, ever in life.
Okay.
So I've been there. Right. I go to watch the show. Right. They never used to put me up. Yeah. Right? They never used to put me up. I used to always try to get up. They never used to put me up. And so I would like always like, you know, I remember one dude was like, "Hey man, you don't need this." When I was first starting, like an older black dude was like, "You don't need this." The best part about this whole thing was, this dude does not remember this. When I first started comedy, there was a dude, I'm not going to say, well, you're going to find his name. This dude, I was asking about advice, and this dude straight up was like, "Yo, you need to quit. Don't do comedy. You're not going to be good. Kill yourself." All of that, right? Just real blunt about it, right?
Yeah.
That same dude was the dude who brought me up on TV.
Wow.
Yeah, full circle.
He didn't remember that?
Oh, no, he didn't remember that, but I never forgot that.
Did you remind him?
Oh, no, I'm not going to remind him. You know, like, you had that moment. Just know.
I still to this day.
I just was like, say my name correctly, though. I was a Mali in the ring. You going to say my name. You going to say my name.
I still to this day remember the dudes who said I wasn't going to play in the NBA and NFL. And guess what?
Look at those profits.
Look, I'm going to remember them just because it's still hope. It's still
get
hope.
Get that up, bro.
There you go. Nah,
oh, my
bro.
Gosh.
So, yeah, October 2nd, 11:30, Comedy Central. Check
that's
me out.
That's what's up. Well, man, definitely everybody tune in. Check it out. I tell you what, the most amount of people, though, who tuned in the history of U.S. politics was this past was it yesterday or the day
Monday?
Before yesterday? Monday.
So
Monday.
Did it hit Super Bowl numbers like they predicted?
I don't remember what the final numbers were. I know it was the most watched
debate
in U.S. history or whatever. But yes, we are talking about crooked Hillary and the Donald
and terrible Trump,
the
terrible
orange Trump, one himself,
the orange one himself. They went off and decided to have a. With a black man officiating. Ain't that interesting?
Was he there? Because I didn't really. Ooh. I don't know. That Ooh, brother was
trying to hate on Lester Holt.
That brother was. I heard him speak like once.
Please.
Hey, stop that.
You know,
hey, put that down.
It's interesting. It's like I definitely think he like receded into the background on a few key parts where it's like you kind of need to step in or whatever. What I do think was good about it, though, I think the questions he asked were pointed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he didn't make them like stick to the like he didn't interrupt them when they were bloviating
like
or whatever.
The best his highlight and his failure, his highlight and low light was in the same question, the stop and frisk. I think that was the thing we all can agree with. Like he made a very strong point, but then his low light was he just let Trump just
let him go. Yeah.
Get away
let
with saying like, "No, you're not right."
That didn't make nobody else feel awkward when they asked him two old white people about. I was like, if there was ever time to phone a friend, just each person get the call.
I'm gonna tell you something.
Call your black friend.
Hillary prepped because she said all the right things at
she
first.
Did. Oh, she got super coached.
Because she was like, yeah.
Why wouldn't she be coached?
Absolutely.
No, I'm just saying, people were saying that was a negative. She's overprepared.
No.
What?
Absolutely not.
When did that become a thing?
That's the people who want to hear the just off-the-cuff Donald Trump nonsense. I just want you to speak in ridiculous.
No, that's not true. I think you can be overcoached to the point that you're actually not listening to the question. You're just regurgitating the answer you think that they want to hear.
Yeah, do that.
But that's politics. That's what I'm saying. Like, the moment people, like, Donald Trump is honestly, well, I mean, there's other politics. Well, you know what? You're right. I'll just concede because I don't want to spend too much time on this. You're right.
I really didn't want
to
be
right.
I
would love to see a politician who we felt was genuinely authentic. I think Bernie Sanders had a piece of that. I think he spoke from his heart. I think the things he communicated, he truly believed. I think most politicians believe what they say. They just, it's just so polished that it's like by the time it comes out. So what Hillary said, the first thing she said, well, when we think about the black community, we got to think about the wonderful churches, we got to think about these and the black businesses. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, somebody was like,
somebody
yo,
in your ear.
Lead off with that. Mm-hmm. Right. But then she goes on with this. She talks about, we got to end, you know, the prison industrial complex. And like, hold up. You and your husband.
Wait a minute.
And I was kind of like, somebody need to point out. That's why you need that brother on the side.
Yeah.
Like who just screams and interrupts the debate. Like, hold up. But what didn't you have something to do with the reason why, like, prisons?
Can people change?
No, they can. Definitely can.
I don't know. You know,
but
I
thought
did, but,
Trump, Trump's statement about Democrats pandering during election season mm-hmm. and only caring about black people during election season when it matters. I was like, that. I was like, come on, Trump.
Yeah.
Almost tweeted something.
Broken clock twice a day.
Exactly. Twice a day. I was like, oh. It was so strong. I was like, I may need to show Trump some love right now. But I was like, no.
Yeah, so, nah. Yeah. I don't want
speaking of which, we ain't talk about, just real quick, shout out NPR. Good sir.
Yeah.
You got
yeah,
on there and praised the Tea Party. Somebody.
My own father was like, hey, man, your boy is on NPR.
Why is your brother, why's your father more
he's
of a
your
fan?
Biggest fan.
But why is your father more
I'm like, I didn't know any idea. I had no idea what he's up to.
Yeah.
Your father knows more about me than you do, bro.
He does. He knows. Yeah. He knows. Listen, don't listen.
Yeah, anyway. So let Shobha me tell you about that was interview. Like, look, man, the Tea Party's amazing. I definitely believe that the Tea Party is kind of what I'm looking for for my own.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I heard too.
I was like, Dave, where'd you too. Get that from? So first of all, I was fanning out because I listen to Morning Edition almost every day on the way to school. Mm. So, I mean, I'm dropping my daughter off to school. So when I knew David Greene was going to be doing an interview, I was like, oh, snap. So I'm sitting there trying to be like, no, y'all, no, I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? I ain't no fan for real, though, for real, for real.
I mean, whatever you want.
So, like, I mean, just ask questions, dog. So the interview was about 20 minutes long. It probably wasn't 20. It was probably like 15 minutes, and they only used like 4 minutes. Yeah. There was a couple of questions I answered terribly, and I'm glad they did not. So this is where editing worked. Yeah, I was like, whew.
Yeah,
I'm glad you didn't put that in there. But yeah, it was pretty dope. It was a dope experience.
No, I think it was really good. I think it definitely, from what I saw in terms of response, a lot of people resonated with that idea of just being kind of stuck, feeling stuck like they don't have a position.
For those that don't know what you talked about, can you
not voting for either. My reasonings for not voting for either Trump or Hillary.
This is good.
And so it's kind of like the whole protest vote. And so I got a lot of people who were like, yeah, man, I feel that. Some people didn't actually agree with the end, but people were like, yo, I definitely feel your plight. There's some people who are just like, no, you're an idiot. This is not the time to protest.
You're wasting your vote.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Obama came out today and said a vote for third party candidate is a vote for Donald Trump. So how do you feel about that?
Real briefly, if there's ever a time for a protest vote, it's the time when you feel like it's going to create the most like rippling effect. And I feel like that's now, like, because people really, really need the vote. See? And so this is a time where you look, now this is a time where you're going to be heard the most because people and the effect. So now going in the future, whoever wins the election, whatever, recognizes like, look, we need them and we can't just pander. We have to actually hear their needs and their concerns. Now, I'm not really concerned with who wins because, one, I don't believe in the narrative that the world's going to blow up and explode whether Donald Trump or Hillary wins.
Okay. Right?
Because specifically, I live in a community where I feel no matter who wins, I feel it's going to stay the same anyway. Like, it's still going to be a piece of bleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the concerns are still going to be the concerns. Education is still going to be pretty much ridiculous. Economic structure is still going to be terrible. Policing is still going to be the same thing. On a national level, the Supreme Court may change. They may appoint certain federal judges, and that can have some implications that are important, right? But when it comes to the way that my, like, the effects that I think I'm going to feel on a day-to-day, I don't think it really matters much until we really, truly are a group of people that our consensus vote matters to the Democratic Party or to the Republican Party. So
Listen.
And I get it, but I'll say this. I get it.
Yeah.
I get why people say this is not the time because nobody wants Donald Trump. Well, nobody in my sphere of influence wants Donald Trump in office. I get it. And it does make more logical sense, and I'll say this real quick. It does make logical sense to say vote for Hillary because you believe she's going to create the worst evils or the worst. She's going to have the worst detriment to our structure in our country.
I just can't. I do agree with Obama when he says like a vote for a third party is a vote for Trump. And the only reason why I say that is
I don't agree with that though. But yeah.
I mean, that's what I believe. But I just feel like two things. One, there's no way I could. You say it doesn't matter. We're the one that went. I get what you're saying. Like, it doesn't matter either way. Like, where our communities will be our communities. I can't live in a world where races are happy. And I feel like if Trump in office, maybe nothing changes, but racists will be happy.
Okay.
And if I have anything to do with that, I'll be very upset. Okay, so that's why I can't protest vote. Another reason why I can't protest vote is the third party. Listen, I'm for third party. Uh-huh. I just wish third party would act like they wanted it years ahead. Third party is such procrastinators. Like, you don't hear about them until, like, third party reminds me of that dude that comes to the party and brings napkins. You know what I mean? Like, yes, these are necessary. Appreciate it. But shut up. We don't really, like, thank you. Thank you for bringing the napkins. Appreciate it. You brought the napkin. Do you think you're a part of this? You think you contributed to this part? No.
The problem is this. No, so that.
You late, third party.
It's not that they're late. No, it's not that they're late. The problem is that they've been at the door for days, for hours. The problem is you as the host don't recognize them throughout the time. Wear some brighter colors. Like, you ignore them. You wear some brighter colors.
Do something, no, for real, though. Because you don't. I always hear about them around election season, right? Yeah, presidential election season. Mm-hmm. But, like, generally, you know, like all the other, like, where you could, like, one of the.
It doesn't benefit anybody. Because the problem is, it doesn't benefit the structures right now for there to be acknowledgement of a third party. Because the way that our media cycles work, the way that our systems work, the way the financial institutions work, it's most beneficial for just two-party systems. Yeah. And so to interrupt that, it creates all kinds of chaos and inconvenience.
Even the Libertarian candidates this year are Republican, then left and kind of became the Libertarian candidates. So a lot of guys will run mainstream in their local elections and then potentially break off for presidential elections. So it's just different.
Yeah. It's just no benefit.
Stop showing up with napkins. Late.
That's really funny, by the way.
Yeah. I do feel like.
I do this professionally.
I think it'll be on Comedy Central this Sunday.
Yeah.
I do feel so the thing about your vote being, you know, voting for a third party candidate is a vote for Trump. I think that's what you said Obama said.
That's Obama said.
And I mean, my general take is this, right? I understand the logic around discouraging people from voting from a third party or whatever. Like, I understand that and I do feel like on some levels, as a Black American, like, we've always been in the case of trying to do a cost benefit analysis between politicians and making a lesser of two evil vote all the time. Like, so I don't feel like,
absolutely,
I don't feel like that's new terrain for us to be like, look, I'm gonna roll with this, not because I think it's perfect, but because it's always the greater.
Let me add that. And I'm just gonna roll with this. It's always I'm gonna roll with the Democratic Party. It's always,
yes. And so just, up until the from the New Deal, yeah, absolutely, yeah. From the right to
and
vote.
So
yes.
Yeah, from the last six decades or five decades. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that when you know that I'm gonna get this particular vote, understood, you don't really have to service them.
You don't have to service.
So I'll pass the mic back. But
what I was gonna say though is that with that, I am someone though who believes. That I believe your vote is sacred at the end of the day.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone could bully you or shame you, absolutely, into giving that away cheaply. Absolutely. And so I basically, if you still make the determination that, hey, I'm going to vote Democratic as a Black American, I'm going to vote Democratic for whatever. Okay, cool. You can do that. I may do that. I don't know. But my argument though, just being that like the way in which you get to that position is more important to me, because I just don't feel like the idea of saying like, man, just give it over here because no, like you hold true to whatever it is you believe in and you make those decisions. Like, I just don't. I think that's a really whack argument by President Obama, essentially. Like, I just think that's a whack position.
And then Dave, can I ask you, like, do you honestly think that Hillary Clinton's less racist than Donald Trump?
Here's my thing. I run into racists all the time, but some of them smile at me.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. And the ones that smile at me,
I get that.
I'm like, you know what? I don't know it. You ain't show it to me yet.
So this is my thing.
I assume it could be.
And I make the statement. Growing up in California, and everybody here except for, never mind. So Don and I are not from the South.
I'm not from the South either.
You're from Kansas City.
I'm from, born in St. Paul, Denver, Colorado, St. Louis, Missouri, Dallas,
anyway,
Texas.
Anyway, you're from Atlanta. So this is the thing. I experienced more racism in California than I ever experienced in the South. And that blew my mind, thinking like, man, I'm going to Alabama to go to college. I'm living in Texas. I mean, like, nobody ever, like, there's a couple times that I can think of in my head where I know blatantly people called me nigger in the South, like, or like they just Yeah. I felt like, I just knew, like, that's racist. Yeah. That's some racist shit right there.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But in California, I just felt like that was just common. Like, when somebody was just like, oh, like, whether it was Irish gangs or it was Asians or whether it was, like, it was easy for them just to call me, you know, this, nigga that, nigga. And they mean it, like, in such a derogatory sense, not like an endearment. Like, this is, and white folks too. And so for me, like, when Trump and Hillary are arguing on stage and I hear Trump talk about stop and frisk, for me, I'd rather know that Trump supports stop and frisk than Hillary, who's going to pander and say whatever it's expedient for the time to get her in office, and knowing when she's in office, she's not going to do a near thing to service the real needs of African-Americans. Then to deal with a dude who like you said, a good question. I think it's a real legitimate question.
That's a good question.
Do we really know that Hillary's not racist?
We
now,
don't.
I will say this. Honestly, don't think she's racist.
Yeah.
But do I think she really cares about the plight of black people in this community? I'll say, I hate to like cast judgment in that kind of sense, but I will say, you know what? That's not her priority. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like when she gets into office, she's going to lose sleep. Just like I don't think Obama has lost sleep over the lack of policies that he's passed in the sense that really benefit African-American community. So now I'm not saying Obama doesn't care, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you do what's expedient, what got you there. And what got you there is caring for a contingency of people who had money, who can lobby, and who can get you reelected. And the people who got him reelected are the people that we see Obama serve.
And I asked the question because during the debates, it's so interesting to me how Hillary Clinton paints this vision of what happened during the stock market crash and the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. And she was speaking literally at New York banks and speaking on Wall Street, mm-hmm, months and weeks before this. Mm-hmm. And so it's she paints this picture that she was so void of the issue. She was, it was out of arm's reach and she had nothing to do with it. And she was at the center of it, speaking with the very people that knew that the impending doom that was coming towards us. And so it's her ability just to spin things as she has nothing to do with them just kind of raises red flags with me of like, Trump is an idiot. Trump is a racist asshole.
But he's not. He's womanizer. Not stupid, though. He's not dumb.
He's not. No. That's not what I was gonna say.
Because he got Hillary on the NAFTA and the trans deal. Because you could say she was like, changed my mind, and that's the kind of stuff that you're talking about. Like, you had Hillary. You're not dumb. Like, you understood what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You called it the gold standard to some degree at one point, but then you. Later, when you knew it wasn't going to be something that people would rock with, you decided like, oh no, this is, I would like to see some things change. I would like to see
and
some
things.
And
then what you supposed to do?
Absolutely. But this is the thing. I work people like Bernie Sanders, who I feel like we can pull up a record 20 years ago and he's consistent then.
I agree with
he's
that.
He's consistent now. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of people I want to point to.
And I think people can mature. I think, because I know Dave, what you're going to say. People can grow. People can change their mind. That's absolutely true. But on every issue is where it becomes an issue.
I don't. Well,
also, Bernie Sanders was also pretty consistent in terms of not actually moving the ball forward for those 25-30 years he's been in that position. So there's a position to take with Hillary where you're too calculating, but she's getting stuff done.
Sure.
And then there's the position, but you might be a little amoral, right, in some areas, right?
Yeah.
And then there's like, man, true. Bernie, you got the morals, but you don't know how to get anything done. You've been in this job for a long time.
I'm just saying, I like flip-flopping politicians.
I understand what you're saying.
You know, legit, because it's like, you work for me.
Flip-flopping in what kind of sense?
In the sense that like, oh, more people like this now? I work for the people.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to do that now. You know
but
what
I
mean?
Do want somebody with some conviction, though.
Why? Like, you work for me.
Why? Because we are flipping people.
Right. It's the whole reason why Alexander Hamilton and their forefathers decided that we needed an electoral college. Because to some degree, we don't need to be making decisions. Because it's the first sign of struggle and turmoil, mm-hmm, we're going to flip-flop.
Yep.
And we don't need people who are going to just flip-flop on every decision. We need some people who can see the tea leaves and be like, you know what? Folks, I know you're wanting to make this decision, but right now it's probably in our best interest to steadfast.
Right? I agree with that. I'm just saying the idea that people are like, well, she flip-flops. I don't think that's, I think that gets demonized a little bit more than it should. It's like
she gets demonized, like, it's in the right reasons, for the right reasons. Yeah. Like, Yeah, I can get it. Like some of the prison issues, some of the criminal justice issues that she faced. We fail to recognize a lot of African Americans were asking for those.
Right.
Were asking for those criminal reforms.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Yeah. That whole, what the CBC or the Congressional Black Caucus was advocating for with regard to that crimes bill. It's a very mixed bag because they were not, the things they wanted out of that bill had nothing to do with how they ended up being enacted.
Exactly. Right.
And the things that had to get, quote, placed in there, it was a question of political expediency that they didn't want to see happen. But yes, it's not as simple as saying this got passed and it's all
Absolutely.
Hillary. Like there's a lot of things that happen with regard to revisionist. I do think one of the interesting things though about that debate and just generally, and I'll even throw Bernie in this too, is that like, I feel as though the majority, like what gets overlooked is that those conversations, those people aren't really talking to Black people. In those conversations, yeah. They're talking to
what conversations?
Those conversations that have to do about racial profiling, about the state of our neighborhoods. They're talking to white voters who have concerns about that or whatever. And so it's very interesting because, you know, all those times, right, in which Donald Trump would, you know, be in Detroit or actually a suburb of Detroit or Milwaukee or whatever, and would be this audience of white people, but that's where he would be delivering his race conversation or whatever. Mm-hmm. He essentially moved that and started to do other ones, but it would be like, yeah, you're kind of signaling, matter of fact, not even just to pick on him, when Hillary did her little like expose of all the alt-right or racist things that Donald Trump has said, all of that conversation is really to other white voters who don't want to feel guilty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. About like, they're like, well, I don't want to be aligned with the racist.
Right.
Like, it's not, they're not actually talking to the Black community when they're having those conversations.
Absolutely.
And I feel like even both of those sides, even when Trump was essentially trying to make a case for, you know, if you look at the communities, you know, they're so terrible, da, 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 da. And I wanted to be like, yeah, like I have seen, I've seen Bernie Sanders make an argument similar to this sometimes too, where it's like, yeah, I feel like some of y'all don't know Black people in a very deep way because every Black person doesn't live in the hood.
Right.
Every Black person doesn't live in substandard community. Every Black person does not have this terrible life experience that woe is me.
Yeah.
We have issues that absolutely fall into some commonalities, but like, dude, I grew up like lower middle class. I never was on like foods. Like, it's just it's just interesting in the way that the way they unify the Black experience into one of simply poor struggle and like wick. It's just,
white people got to stop watching TV so much.
Yo, when they started the race, was whatever that topic, that particular topic was, it was like race policy, whatever, race relations,
policing,
and
all that.
Race relations and policing. And I almost tweeted, I was like, why have we become, like, why is the conversation of Black community all about criminalization?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, so when we're talking about Black people, it's about crime. Mm-hmm. It's about policing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm pretty sure we're more than crime
and
policing.
A little bit more, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so
frustrating. And so if you were to talk about, you know, whatever, the white vote, which they don't explicitly talk about. Right. They talk about, but not explicitly. If they were to talk about that, you don't hear them discussing, you know what I'm saying? I have a friend who's a lawyer in West Virginia, like the terrible.
Yeah, the Appalachian.
The terrible crime, the way that heroin and crystal meth and all of that is just decimating that community. Not to mention, they had a water poisoning 2 years ago that they were dealing with as well, too. But you don't hear that conversation because that is not the popular idea of what whiteness is in America. And so I just feel like it's very disingenuous the way the conversation is framed often. I do want to at least bring up this point get y'all's feedback.
How did Hope disappear the whole debate?
You know, we already talked about that, but if you want to go back to it, we definitely can, because he was definitely gone.
Just disappeared.
Come on. But I do think it was interesting how Trump wanted us to thank him for the birth. Like,
what?
Son. Like, did y'all hear? Like,
the more he says, I can't, like, I'm beyond the point of being mad. I'm like, man, if I ever had that much confidence, who knows
absolutely
what I can do. Like, there's something to confidence that we're not. Someone, I don't think we're fully
someone
grasping.
Said, "Lord, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man."
Right?
There's a shirt.
There's a shirt.
Yo, like, man.
So this dude, his syntax was just even like a wreck. I was like, he was a very against police. What is that sentence? I was like, what? That's a potential president?
Yo, I was watching Late Night with Seth Meyers, and he just like read. So it's like, don't play back his stuff. Just read it.
Yeah. It's so bad.
And when he started talking about computers, and he was like, my 10-year-old son has a computer. He's so good at computers. He's good at cyber. Cyber's good. I was just like, how did this happen? It hit me.
It's real. Like, that's when I realized, I was like, there's no way, we cannot allow this man to represent us in this country with that type of syntax.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It's
cyber.
It's killing me.
He kept saying cyber. Like, we were in a 1985... Bro. Cutting edge, like, computer
this was,
movie.
Sandra Bullock, the
yeah,
net.
Yeah.
When the internet is the devil.
Yeah, it was just, man. But yep. but confidence.
Can
never understood.
How Lester Holt disappeared.
I felt bad for Lester,
bad brother. He's the only brother.
Thing though. I try to give Lester Holt, like, I try to cut him slack just because, I mean, what's his name? He got his spot because old dude lied, right? Brian Williams. He had those fake stories.
Yeah. That dude, Brian Williams.
He's a great storyteller.
He got relegated to MSNBC. We ain't seen him since. He's out in MSNBC land.
Man.
Like, they were like, you can't come back to NBC, bro. Oh, at all. You got to go to that.
Is that where he is now, is MSNBC?
He literally is up there. Yeah, they ain't letting him come back to the main stage.
Brian Williams like, yeah, I was there.
I wrote him
got a shutdown. And, you know, we were just calling for medic. And, nah, brother, you was in Minnesota.
Oh, man. It's funny,
bro. You know, like Trump, this is what cracked me up, was when he asked about the taxes, and he goes, that makes me smart, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, I know what's this night somewhere throwing everything in his TV. Wait a minute. Here's what's crazy, though. Once he said, then they interviewed him right after, and he said, I didn't say that.
Right, yeah.
Well, and he said that he, like, the next day, he was talking about, well, I even won the MSNBC poll.
No, the CBS poll.
The CBS
the
poll.
The post poll.
And they didn't even do
CBS
it.
CBS didn't have
a
poll.
We didn't do that.
I'm like, this is perfect. You cannot stop lying.
All of them. I mean, when he was talking about how he didn't say that global warming was created by the Chinese.
And then everybody posted
everybody had the
that
tweets
tweet.
Up there.
Like, we got the receipts, bro. We see
but
you.
But see, that's the thing. Like, he's lowered the bar so low.
Absolutely.
To where... it's this weird thing where it's like, man, he only lied 8 times blatantly.
Absolutely, yes.
And it's this strange Trump curve where anybody else can't get off on
it's
that.
It's absolutely weird. But like, because he can interrupt, he can be rude.
Oh my God.
And it's cool. Yeah, it's cool. It's acceptable. It's like, what?
We
is,
still ain't heard an so economic
low,
plan.
Though, it's so low, though, that Hillary Clinton looks good. Because we literally, in this debate, it was brought out that about the email hack that Russia did that was encouraged by Trump but all the DNC stuff came out in support of her and her involvement in that.
Absolutely.
And it was just glazed over because of his ridiculousness.
Yeah.
It's like in this election we literally had a candidate who was potentially in cahoots with the DNC to make sure that she was becoming the candidate, and we are not dealing with that issue. Mm-hmm. And we're not dealing with Benghazi. Well, there are things in this election that would derail any candidate in the last 150 years. But because of Donald Trump, those things are not deal breakers. So the bar's lowered universally, not just for him.
Yes, I think it's lower for him. But yes, my personal, from what I can tell, because... There's issues of decorum and acting presidential. I'm not even getting to actual substantive things, but these things that apparently we are okay with him being that way.
Mm-hmm.
That
just brutish. Yeah.
And to that end, you could call it, you know, sexism, you call it whatever, but we cannot allow Hillary to act that same way, even if she has morally questionable things or things that we're like, yeah, there's an appearance of impropriety here that we don't, that we would want to investigate, but we're not even able to like, we're basically, I just think it's so much lower for him in that regard. But my overall thought was, which I do think kind of connects to what you were saying, is that like,
I was trying to figure out how to tweet this, but then I was just like, it's beyond 140 characters and I can't figure out how to do this. I don't
those are the worst.
Yeah, I don't want to tweet two or three times. Bro. Just leave this alone.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately like one of the things that does bother me is that Trump is so ridiculous, right? That I feel like so much time is dedicated to his ridiculousness that on some levels I feel like Hillary, I'm not even saying this as a fan of Hillary, I promise you I'm not, but I feel like we deserve a better representation for, like, she deserves a better candidate so that we can investigate her better.
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes,
like,
totally.
Like, I feel like if she goes on to win this, right, which
I feel like Bernie Sanders did that. Well, if you paid attention to,
yeah,
that's true.
Bernie Sanders brought the best out of it. It's like the NFC championship when you feel like the AFC, you know, is going to get smashed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, ours, like Oklahoma City and Golden State.
Yeah,
like, man, we thought that was a championship game. And, so, yeah, like, I felt Bernie Sanders brought the best and the worst out of her.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think that, like, and so my point being is that we spend so much time looking at just the spectacle and the carnival show that is Trump that, like, I feel like what we should be doing ideally in either of these situations is being able to assess either candidate to say what type of president would he or she be. And I don't think we're getting to, like, interrogate her in that way because we are too busy, like, looking at these other things that are, like, that matter, but they don't, like, they don't actually tell us how they're going to govern in a very substantive, like, a substantial way, in my opinion. I do think that basically Bernie Sanders and Hillary was providing the best window into the type of president she would be, but it's just it's terrible. It's
Can we talk about where's Ja moment we during the presidential debate?
Hannity.
Like, Hannity. He was like,
call Hannity.
Somebody get Hannity.
Hannity.
Somebody get Hannity
on the phone. Where's Hannity?
We gotta make sense of this.
That
boy was like, somebody just get, nobody calls
Hannity.
Nobody will call him. So they, man.
Like, where's Ja? Somebody get Ja on the phone.
On the line.
There's a podcast, which I don't like promoting the podcast, but there's a podcast called Keeping It 1600, which they absolutely... one of them has the number to Sean Hannity, and so they called him on speakerphone.
No.
And they were literally like, hey, blah 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 blah, I'm from Donald Trump kept saying we should call you about like
that is hilarious.
He
hung up in like 20 seconds.
He tweeted like, yes, Donald Trump and I had some very colorful conversations.
Yo, I want to talk about people, you know, in it, because we're talking about two people who, like, we kind of are trying to figure out if they care about the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Mega pastors,
my favorite.
What type of mega pastors?
I'm talking about the rich ones. I'm talking about the ones with planes. I'm talking about the ones with planes, trains, and automobiles.
Dollars
for themselves. Now, I want to bring this up because if I could pull up the story, I'd have it played. But basically, there's a church there's a spot in Detroit.
He took church out of it.
There's a spot.
There's a church. No, you know what? Nah,
I didn't want to change it like that.
I ain't even going to give it church.
Yo,
it's a location. No. People gather.
There's a plot of land.
Yeah.
No. There's so Great Faith Ministries International in Detroit.
Okay.
Pastored by the apostle Wayne T. Jackson. Okay. He Brandon had a situation not too long ago, almost a couple weeks ago, in which an organization out of Detroit called the New Era Detroit, kind of were up in their church.
kind of just
ran,
like, yeah, we gonna be where you be at.
Pretty much, they ran up in the day.
Don't so, keep my name out your mouth.
Yo. So they basically went and they were in service. They were just in the service. But what ended up happening is, the church started to take up offering, and they started off at a requested $1,000.
Wow.
And asked for a $1,000 offering. After getting the $1,000 offerings that they could receive, they then said, also, let me be very clear, they made suggestions that if you did not have the $1,000 on you, there were ATMs in the church to get the money. Absolutely, yeah. They then said, if you do not have $1,000, we will move to the next group, the next bracket, the next tier, which was $300.
And that's individually?
It's individually. You can't pull your money together. Nah, okay. Nah. Blessings don't work that way. Oh. But
what you want? Have a blessing? Give me that thousand.
But the you want to go half on a blessing?
Half on a blessing.
But the new era, Detroit, they basically disrupted the service. They startled worshipers. They screamed, and some even became physical. Soon, a full brawl erupted between some of the parishioners and the activists. Now, the members of the church were appalled by the actions of New Era Detroit. And stated that that group should have reached out to the church before disrupting their service. Now, this group, they just want to be very clear. They felt as though the community wanted to, a community organization, New Era Detroit, wanted to draw attention to what it described as pastors robbing the community. Okay, the community is extremely poor. Around the church and
what's
in that surrounding.
Do you know the location? Like the streets?
I don't know the exact streets locations.
Can we find that out?
Yeah, what's it called?
New Era. Or I'm sorry, not New Era.
This is the same church that Donald Trump was there, and then they were protesting. They had like the taco truck outside, I think.
Wait, yeah. What's the taco truck got doing?
Because you know they were saying
great
like
faith.
Because somebody made a statement about great if faith, we man. Keep letting immigrants over, then there's going to be a taco truck on
taco
every corner.
Trucks, which is not a bad
nobody's
thing.
Ever complained no about taco trucks.
As soon as he said that, I was like,
especially good taco trucks.
I'd love to see a taco truck outside right now.
I could use a taco truck right now. I'm very hungry.
Absolutely. I'm like, yo, Dan, press pause.
Yeah, let's get this taco.
Let's get
tacos.
These tacos
real
quick.
Yo, when I was in LA, I had a taco van. I was in a taco
I've never
van.
Seen a taco van.
I shouldn't be
mad
here.
At it.
No, I'm not. I bought it from a brother. No, it was a white van. It was a dude in a white van. And I ate. I had like
that
six tacos
bad idea,
for like
bro.
$2.
Terrible idea.
I'm a miracle.
Yes,
I'm
you
saying.
Are.
I shouldn't be here.
So all I'm saying is that church is, they're just glutton for ridiculousness.
Well, this.
All right, so this church is located.
Why are we getting the location?
Because I want to know exactly where it is.
You want, yeah.
Near Barton and McFarland Park.
Gosh. Yeah. It's a very. So basically, they, you know, and I will, I have no problem if
let me just say this real quick. I think it's weird that they, the people of the church, not weird, they were like, when they said, oh, we, you know, they should have reached out to us first. I don't recall Jesus asking people before he flipped over that table. He was like, you know what, I don't like this, flipped over the table. Mm-hmm. You need more people flipping over tables, smacking up people,
bro,
in the church. I'm all for it.
I'm all for slapping ministry, bro.
Yeah.
I'm all for
pimp
slapping.
Can we get that team started?
Bro,
that? Come on.
I'm all for it. I think there's certain people who need to be slapped, man.
Mm. I just... Prosperity.
We need to run up on some hope from folks and punch and gut punch them.
Yeah,
start punching folks in their throat, bro.
It's too much, man. Every time I hear about churches like this, honestly, I was like, man, I'm in the wrong profession, man.
You should have been a pastor.
Honestly, I got too much. I thought about this early on. I was like, man, I got too much charisma to be a pastor.
But it's no different from like Tony Robbins.
I know
same type of people. There's motivational speakers that just sell people on BS. It's
yeah,
just, you
when
know,
you put God in, it's just dirty.
Yeah, it's an extra level. Of
it's
shame.
An extra level. Yeah,
it's
shameful.
It's a whole nother level.
But dude. I could have been me. That's me thinking about that. I don't got no jets. Think about me right now with this charisma. I'd have all the jets.
What do y'all think about the argument they make about, say, you know, because normally they will revert and say like, well, we give out this much or we help people with their, you know, we because I think in one of the news reports they make the argument like, hey, you know. One, they don't call him pastor. They call him apostle, which I have my own thoughts about. Ooh. But
what is an apostle, like the legitimate definition? I don't know much.
About, like,
I went to Christian school.
I
thought you had to know Jesus.
Yeah, you had to walk
to be
with
an
Jesus.
Apostle. Like, I thought you had to be like, what up, Jesus? High five, have a handshake.
I don't believe in the current office of apostle.
Yeah.
In the new, like, I don't believe
ridiculous.
It's a real thing now. Like,
they change it and manipulate it to just one who starts churches.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Who's kind of like the overseer of multiple churches. And
oh, so he got a jet and go preach on Saturday? Does he
I
have
guess,
that?
Yeah.
Man.
But it's definitely not, it's the classical orthodox definition of what an apostle is.
So frustrating. Too many people.
I've met many apostles. So, and I performed at many churches where apostles led.
Don't get me wrong. I'll take an apostle check.
Jeez, every apostle was
worse.
Murdered in the Bible, or like, except two, maybe.
You never hear about the Justin getting murdered.
I think one, John. I think John was the only one who wasn't.
Yeah,
but anyway, the point is this: is that what were you saying? Like,
the argument that they will make oftentimes is just like, you don't know what we actually do in terms of. you know, they say that, you know, he said the apostle has bought homes for people and bought cars and you should have a conversation with him or whatever, which gets into this whole other piece of with regard to like the separation between like how easy is it to have that conversation, you know, between when there's so many layers between actually sitting down with someone. But aside from that, that is an argument that's thrown out there oftentimes, is that like as much as we look at the glamour, the planes, the whatever, that these people give out a lot more than we're aware of. And so that should, quote, inoculate them from criticism of
some of that stuff being necessary, whatever. Man. It's, I mean, not some of it. I remember, I'm going to tell you a story. I met Eddie Long. Ever tell you the story?
I'm so scared right now.
Please tell it. Please tell it.
I don't care.
Tell it. No.
I remember. I remember. I was working. I was in college and I was working in like this youth ministry or whatever. And I got to meet him. And we went to his office. And I got to go in his office. And I'll never get two things. I'll never get. I remember seeing above his door on the exit of his office, it said, "His Eminence, Eddie Long." And I remember thinking, like, I don't think I'm Eminence. Like, that feels very royal and like in a very kind of like not necessary way. And then I remember seeing two things. I remember seeing there was a statue in his office, like a golden looking statue of, I don't remember what it was, but I was like, that don't need to be here. I don't think that required, none of this required. And I remember seeing a diamond encrusted letter opener.
Are you serious?
I remember seeing that. Yeah. And I remember thinking like that. Like, I was like, that can fit in my pocket. That's the first thing I thought. I never been close to something that much money. I was like, I'll put that in my pocket. I'm good.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. So my thing is that, you know.
See, that was safe.
It's whatever. I don't care.
You said you were scared.
I was scared to figure out what.
And before you reply, I want to, you know, I'll throw this out there too.
You said I have more.
Like, do you, you know, and so you can take this as well as whatever else you were going to say, but do you feel like, do these churches owe the community that they're actually placed in? Like, should you see a visible change with regard to the economic status of the churches that those places live in?
Absolutely. So yeah. All right. So let me answer that question. Let me answer the latter first. I'm two answers to that. I will say, from a Shobaraka answer, I would say yes. I definitely think there should be some responsibility from seeing, like, for instance, if your church is in the middle of a community that is blighted and struggling, but you're thriving, your building looks like you spent a couple million on it. There's people who are driving in out of it with BMWs and Porsches and, you know, different types of vehicles that we obviously would recognize as luxury vehicles. I would say, man, I believe there is some sort of onus and responsibility on that church to be a visible service to that community. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like oftentimes that's not the case. Now, on the flip side, I will say the only reason why I would justify them not being a visible healing agent in that particular community is maybe because they spend all their resources in serving people who are actual members of the church. Okay. And those members aren't visibly recognized on that particular block or community, I guess, right? Because there are people because of the type of world we live in, there's a lot of transient individuals, people who travel 30 minutes, 40 minutes to go to churches, and they don't live directly within the community in which they worship, right? Mm-hmm. None of us, I don't think any of us actually can walk to our church.
No.
And so I know the call of the church is to serve those first who you're directly responsible for. But I do believe that anybody who cares about the souls of individuals cares about the people who you are directly connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And that means people that you are directly doing life with. And hopefully those are people who live on your block, people who live in your particular community and in your city. And if a church is located in a community where there's housing that's looking like it's falling apart, there's poor economic structures, there's prostitution happening, but you're thriving and your pastor is driving, you know, luxury vehicles and he can afford to fly or she can afford to fly from like, you know, state to state and country to country, and they're getting these massive checks and honorariums to do. I think that's a pity. That's a huge disservice, not only to the Lord, but to the community. And I think that's problematic.
Yeah.
I think every church should almost go out of business. You know what I mean?
I think I agree with that. I think, like, I agree with that.
Every church should be almost about to go out of business. Meaning, okay, you've exhausted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, you serve your members.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But the community, you doing it right.
Absolutely.
I feel like it should almost be going out of, and you never hear about church going out of business. Right. Churches move.
Yeah.
And go out of business.
Well, I think it should be in the sense that the church is consistently trusting in the Lord to provide resources mm-hmm. for them, because they're always serving. Like the one thing C.S. Lewis talks about, he says, man, people who give never worry. Like, the person who is charitable never really has to worry about resources, because it's like, for some reason, the more I give, it's not this magical thing. It's just, the Lord provides for those people who are charitable with their resources. And if a church, as you said, if they're really concerned about the community, then they're consistently caring not only for the members, but they're caring about the community, mm-hmm. which means that they're not trying to create this storehouse. And there's a parable about mm-hmm. that.
Well, one of my thoughts is just, one of the things I agree with everything that you're saying, everything that everybody's saying. It vexes, like, it bothers me to no end what happens, like, with prosperity preaching and just people who are on that side. But I am curious, like, some of the argument as well for it is that, is there value, like, I don't know how to say this without it sounding weird, but, like, where's the respect in not owning your building that you're a church? Like, where's the respect in constantly being behind on?
I don't think there's, yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, not to position it as though that's the argument that is being made, but the idea of almost being out of business. So the idea of we take in, we give out, we take in, we give out. There is some value to being like, well, no, like, we actually own this block. We actually are, like, mm-hmm. we're not struggling
right.
to keep the lights Absolutely. On. We're not struggling to whatever. It, like, I think that sometimes the argument against prosperity preaching also goes the other side of that pendulum, where it's like, yo, like, you, when you talk about almost going out of business, there are plenty of churches who absolutely do not have a lot of money. I can think of two guys I know who started churches that they didn't last. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you could say, like, their hearts were in the right places,
right.
but then some of them lack understanding of, like, business and how to actually, saying? Like, you have this idea for service. It's the same thing about nonprofits. You can have mm-hmm. You got a wonderful ideal in terms of what you want to see accomplished. Mm-hmm. But if you don't actually understand the fundamentals of managing and overseeing revenue and figuring out what you need to do, like, I don't know. Like, I think, like, there's other sides of it.
I agree. I definitely agree with what you're saying. I will say, so, and excuse my ignorance in the sense I'm going to speak on some things that I'm not mm-hmm. an expert in. But, like, when you look at, like, Twitter and Netflix, those are both businesses that don't make money, but they seem to be very, they're functional, right?
Influential, right. definitely.
They're influential
yeah.
and they're functional. And nobody's going to ever say, oh, like, they're not making an impact on culture.
Right.
And they're not fulfilling their brand or their product purpose.
Right.
But there was an NPR, there was an interview, there was a
report.
The report. Dang, bro.
Story.
Story and report. What are those words? Come on, Jesus. Satan, get behind me. So anyway, there was a report on NPR that was talking about how Twitter is they're trying to sell. Like,
yeah,
they're trying to sell Twitter, right?
This morning.
And I'm tripping. Yeah, I'm like, what?
To Disney, right?
Yeah, to Disney. Mm-hmm. Like,
man.
But nobody's going to ever say, like, Twitter is not functional. Like, they're not successful in the sense that. And I would say that's how I view a church that's going out of business.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that they're probably not killing it in the sense, because one, we got to also think about every church that's located in particular communities, they can't thrive because the communities in which they're in is not a thriving community.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like they have to function on, like, the next month. They got to live like check to check mm-hmm. almost mm-hmm. for the lack of a better word, but they manage that in a way that I think is productive and beneficial for the community. Mm-hmm. And so They bring in so many resources, they budget it well, but they're at the same time, they're serving that particular community. They're never going to be able to own the farm. They're never going to be able to own the market down the street, because they just can't. But the people who live in a community can, and they can teach them how to do that well and use those services for the benefit of the city. And I think that's what's not happening in a lot of these prosperity churches. There are people who make money, but I think the this is the thing, and I'm going to talk out the side of my neck, and I hope it makes sense. One is that I've met many people who go to these churches, these prosperity churches, and they're very generous people, mm-hmm. and they give a lot of money. Yeah. And part of it is because this convoluted
not just to the church, but actually, to like, the people. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like absolutely. I know of a brother who knew of a dude who was about to lose his house, and he was like, "Yo," and he goes to this type of church. He was like, "Yo, let him know I'll give him 5 G's today."
Right.
And I'm like, "Whoa, that's
yeah." Mm-hmm. I don't know if
huge.
I would do that.
Yeah, I'm like, "That's huge. That's huge."
Right.
So I'll say that there are people who I know who are quite generous, but I also know a lot of. More than not, I've met people who have a very convoluted perspective on money.
Yes.
And it's a very dangerous view on money as if God owes them something.
Right.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And it's put them in situations that have more where they've lost cars, where mm-hmm. they've lost houses, they've lost relationships. They've trusted people that have, led them in the wrong direction. So what I'll say is, although I've seen people who in a lot of these churches who have done great deeds and seem very charitable, in the same sense, I'll say I've met a lot of people who have, because of their convoluted perspective of money and how they feel like God owes them something, it has ruined their lives, and they've been put in situations that I think are very dangerous and unhealthy. And oftentimes, in a sense, teaches them how to be stingy and how to be misers in a way that I don't think the gospel nor the Bible teaches us.
Isn't that part of like the prosperity gospel? Is there's a certain sense that God owes you?
Yeah, That's you what I'm can saying. Claim so like you can like you speak these things because one, they believe in this idea that you are a God. Mm-hmm. And that's the root of the heresy, is that we're mini gods and that mm-hmm. we
little
can speak.
G.
Yeah, we're a little G, so that therefore you can speak certain things into existence, which they take a scripture way out of context, right? Mm-hmm. And speak those things as though they were. That doesn't mean in any sense that
whatsoever,
which
plans.
Is actually the actual hermeneutics of which it meant in the scripture. Yeah. And so,
but all it takes is one, seeing it one time.
That's it. That's all it
it's
takes.
It's like games.
And to see somebody that's successful.
It's like bad game.
Exactly. It's
you
very
see
bad
do a
game.
Bad game, and it works one time, and it's like, that's it forever. That's like, it. Nah, like, bro, that was bad. You just ran into a dummy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Like it's a bad absolutely. Game.
So, yeah. And
bad game.
So, anyway, yeah.
I think the like ultimate pitfall that most people fall into is not necessarily the like the prosperity church, because those exist and it's terrible. And we're watching kind of the damage it can do in the local community. But I think the far greater danger are churches who are affluent and lose sight of their need of the discomfort that comes with chasing and pursuing the gospel. And I think there are a lot of churches out there that become comfortable, like people, right? Because churches are people. And so I think as people get comfortable, they can lose sight of actually pursuing what they're called to and can kind of fall back into comfort. And so mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of pastors out there who they don't like stirring the pot anymore because absolutely. They're afraid that money's going to fly out the door and ties are going to get cut off. And I think we ultimately become kind of prosperity or not. This notion that we need to say the right things, this movie theater mentality, so that we need to get people in the door so they pay the ticket, so that they give us their money. It's the American church, and it's hard to watch it work. And I think ultimately it's why we see the American church struggling, is because
it's based on
it's entertainment.
It's based on the idea of privilege. So like mm-hmm. Christianity was never or nor should ever be formed on this context of privilege. And when you build a religion and a philosophy on like privilege, then you always expect that people should be subservient to your way of thinking. And Christianity it thrived in persecution. Mm-hmm. It thrived in being an outcast. Like you see Jesus being an outcast and trying to convince people like, no, this is the way. So the problem is, and this is a famous quote, when people of privilege are asked to give up their equality, it feels like oppression, right? So mm-hmm. these folks who had everything go their way all their life, when they're asked to give equality or to loosen some of that oppression, it feels like, man, I'm losing my life. I'm losing my grip on all that I know. And I feel like the other side of the same evil with a different name is this idea of, I think that it's being perpetuated within a lot of conservative circles, which is this idea of success and the whole manifest destiny. It's like, we are to succeed. We are to be successful. It's not a religious rhetoric, but it's a conservative rhetoric. It's more of a political rhetoric that believes that nothing should stop us from being successful and taking what is ours and achieving and goals. And therefore, what happens is you just mole over anybody in order to achieve something. That's why people don't care. That's why, I mean, people don't matter to you. Ethnicity doesn't matter. Race doesn't matter. Gender doesn't matter. And I would even say sexual preference doesn't matter. You don't even consider the fact that you're being insensitive to a person or to the way people think, because the goal is that God has ordained that this is mine. Where that can be the problem with successful churches is that, man, when you see our successful Christianity in this life that is based on means, is that, man, our goal is to never dominate this earth in the sense that resources or material things is our ultimate goal. Our goal is our ultimate kingdom is not of this earth. And so you don't mind losing those things.
Yeah, I think, and I would, to add to the all of those points, I think the piece that I think is ends up being the final act of a lot of this, which I think is probably the most devastating, is that because it's bad theology, it drives you to a very bad place when that theology doesn't pan out. Mm-hmm. Like, I can say, I remember, so I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is essentially kind of terminal. Like, they don't really have a cure for it or anything like that. And I remember, like, just going through terrible, like, health, like, situation at that time, like, when I was first diagnosed and all this stuff like that. And it was a really dire situation. And I was around people who, or I had some people in my life who were, you know, health and wellness, like with regards to the gospel. And so in a place, you know, they're essentially asking, you know, as politely as one, either is there unrepentant sin in your life, right? And then or the other question just goes to, well, God didn't ordain this for you. Like, there's a, you know, he wants you to be well, he wants you to thrive, he wants you to be healthy, he wants you to, you know, at the cross, all things were restored, like all that type of ideology. And so what happens is, if I ascribe to that, or if I hold to that, if I never get healed, right? Absolutely. If nothing ever happens, if that person dies of cancer, if your mother doesn't make it, if whatever terrible, heartbreaking thing occurs, right, to its end, then, and you have been holding God to this standard, you've been believing that God owed you a healing or owed you deliverance out of whatever the situation is, what happens then to your relationship with God out of that, right? And that's what I've seen happen more times than I have cared to witness with people who have fallen away from the faith or have gone other places with regards to just not, with regards to believing that this whole thing is a lie. You know what I mean? Because how they were taught God, how they believed God to operate, how they understood God to be, turned out to be false. And so they threw everything out. Yeah. And that's what I think is probably the one of the, you know, the ultimately the worst part of what ends up happening in a lot of those situations.
So my question is, who's signing up for this this ministry? We calling this Smack Pastor?
I'm down. I'm with you, bro.
Well, you're running up on him.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Run up on them, crew.
I may wear a mask. Yo, random, totally has nothing. Did you see? I don't know what university it was.
Oh, with the dude wearing the gorilla mask. Oh my goodness, I saw that before I came out here.
He said, ooh, before I heard what you said.
Okay.
No, go ahead, Debbie, you got it.
There was a Black Lives Matter protest
at a
college campus.
Okay.
And a dude shows up, white dude shows up in overalls and a gorilla mask and is handing out bananas.
Stop.
Oh no!
Bag, pulling the bananas out of a rebel a bag
out of a rebel bag with a Dixie flag in his hand, and shout out to everybody there for being
most,
like, yo, I'm a grown man.
All the shout outs
with a lot to lose, and not I to know
you about to
not to be on TV October 2nd. Comedy Central, 11:30 p.m. Heart of the City.
Yeah.
I would have loved, like, somebody getting hands put on him. I feel, you know what I mean? Like, I was angry he watching. Wanted, I know that's what he wanted. That's but also, what he wanted. I also wanted to hit someone for him.
Yeah.
So why can't we both get what we want?
He wanted to go out there, make a scene.
Like, that was the most. And them, brothers.
He wanted somebody to hit him so that he can make, oh, look at these Black Lives Matter protesters at college campus. They'd act like animals. And so I thought they had, it was amazing.
It was the most,
folks
were
taking a banana. Was like, yo, I'll
yo, one
banana.
Dude ate that banana, and then somebody, don't eat that banana. You know, it was over that banana. That brother was like, I'll eat that banana. I don't care.
Exactly.
I don't care.
I would have been that dude. I was like, I'll eat the banana.
I would not eat that banana.
I don't plan to eat. No, I'd have took it.
I would have took it.
I would have engaged it. I thought they handled it perfectly. Wow. And then eventually the school police came and removed the dude, took his mask off. And
it was, oh, they knew who he was?
He was ashamed to show his face. He was trying to cover his face
up. Man. Oh, man. You got to have that Scooby-Doo moment.
Yeah. Don't be out there.
Scooby-Doo moment.
I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
For you pesky Black Lives Matter protesters.
Wow. Yeah, that was the most intense thing. That was insane.
Man.
That joint was deep. I was like, this dude has
somewhere in Tennessee.
All the gnats, bro.
He's
crazy.
Something, yeah. Some.
There was a camera in the distance somewhere.
Yeah.
This is like a social experiment.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Have you seen that video where the dude, like, apparently this white cat goes into two different communities and he, like, All Lives Matter protests in a black community and then a Black Lives Matter in a white community.
Mm.
And he's like, tell me what you guys think, because I want to punch that dude in his mouth so hard, bro.
I
want to
punch. There's a list of
maybe
punch.
Maybe we
I'm
should
interested.
Do that. Maybe
I'm
instead
interested.
Of a
scratch.
What happened? What happened in the video?
So... It so is, his social experiment
it is such a flawed experiment.
Exactly. It's so flawed.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, I'll say. So, basically, he takes a Black Lives Matter poster and he stands in a white affluent neighborhood.
Sure.
And I guess there's no real hostility towards him. You know, no hostility. There's people who are like, you know, whatever. He takes an All Lives Matter sign into a black community and people are like, yo, dude, what are you doing here? What are you doing? Some people try to take a sign away, run him off or whatever. And so he's like... And so at the end, he's like, what do you guys think? This is what happened. I get run out of the black community. White people don't care.
White people ain't got nothing to lose. Like, oh, so I'm going to go buy some quinoa now. Thank you very much.
It's all kind of flawed. It's flawed from the jump.
Yeah.
It's flawed from the jump. But if you take that same Black Lives Matter protest sign and you go to like a hillbilly white.
Yeah,
like,
do that.
Yeah, where there's rebel flags everywhere, right. You'll get a different experience.
Right.
Yeah.
And the really thing to have the, if you had a black guy in a black neighborhood
exactly.
with the All Lives Matter.
Oh, he was a white dude?
Yeah.
He was a white dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, and again, All Lives Matter is a response. Yeah. At the end of the, like, I always go back to this. Like, it's not an initial.
Yeah, you didn't think of this first.
It's like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not an initial statement. It's a reply.
It's a reply to
And so
something.
The fact that it's a reply automatically lets you know that you are. You're jumping in into a conversation.
That's good.
So it's
man, now I'm dropping stuff down.
That was dope. That was dope. Can the I other thing that? Is like we probably need to just start doing like I want to punch in the face like that instead of doing the scratch of the week.
Yo, that's real.
Like who you want to punch in the face?
That's real.
I want to punch in the face.
Ooh, that's good. Because I was about to go to the scratch of the week. We might as well just do the punch of the week.
Just do the punch of the week, bro.
It.
I don't know yet. Let me
I got one.
Okay.
I want to punch the debate commission for not putting Gary Johnson on the platform. I think for the very least...
I'd rather go with Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. But this is your
third,
punch, though.
A third... Thank you for hijacking my punch.
I got him dead.
taking one for the team.
I got your boy, bro.
My shooter.
shooter, right. You know what I'm saying? You never go to jail again.
But just giving... I think Adon's point earlier says it incredibly... way better than I could, that there needs to be another foil to both of these candidates. And I think a third party candidate on stage to offer a different perspective and to be sane would offer us all, I think, a level of sanity in these debates where they couldn't just be going at each other's throats. So
yeah, I messes with Jill Stein except for on a couple of things like her green situation.
Gary Johnson's cool, man.
Yeah,
Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson
scare me just a little bit. It's a little too much. Like you trust people a little too much.
Jill Stein, though,
or you just are willing to let them die a little bit too easily. Exactly.
My issue with Jill Stein is that like.
She and that fake, Cornel West running mate she got.
Oh, I didn't even see that part, but I'm sure I would.
His last name Baraka. He got Baraka in his name.
So. Went so far as to get a running mate. Who signed up to be the vice president, the third candidate for the third party? What you was doing before? You're like, man, I wasn't doing nothing else,
Governor, Governor Wield is Johnson's running mate, and he's actually really, really dope.
He might be dope, but man, I just be like, hey, man, I gotta focus.
Nah, I just didn't. I just felt like felt like she, you know, she doesn't believe in vaccinations, which I'm like, I always feel like, man, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that I'm like, but she's a doctor, so part of me is like, yo, if you're a doctor, you don't believe in vaccination. I kind of like feel like there's a reason why you.
Yeah, fam.
Every doctor is a doctor.
And that's not my argument.
Let me tell you something about Bill Carson.
Please tell me something I don't know about him.
I think I rocks with Bill Carson a little bit on things. I think Bill Carson
like on religion.
Yes, to some degree on religion, but I would even say Ben Carson has more sense than he than
and his body and this, face this, and speech this. Allows him to communicate.
Nah, man, I think the issue is when you get there's something to groupthink. There's something to when you put somebody in a context of 5 to 6 to 8 other folks and they all are like, there's an expectation of what you have to say with on that stage. It changes the way you act. And
I've seen him on one-on-one stuff. It's none of
he's
it.
A boring dude. He's dry.
That is the nicest thing.
But what I'm saying is have you ever really like listened to him talk about
issues? Had to read Gifted Hands as a kid. I've never given my parents for that. Okay. I believed it in that man.
All right, so I'm moving on. I'm leaving it alone.
Sorry.
I'm not here to fight for Ben Carson. Let's just, I'm just
never
saying, like,
give my parents.
I've heard
that.
All I'm saying is I've heard him say some stuff that I was like, "Yo, that was really solid."
I think that's the greater indictment, though, is that because I think he knows. Yeah. I think on some level he knows, and it's just like, man, you know, when you're making these decisions.
Because even his BET interview, I was like, "Yo, most of what he said on there was pretty." Except
was
when he
was
trying to. He was by himself. He was
I thought it was the one with D1.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
I wanted to give the alley-oop, but that's...
I know.
Except when he was trying to co-sign...
Why are rappers interviewing entertainers? They got Mary J. Blige interviewing Hillary Clinton. Who asked for
that? Bro.
Damn.
Can we Who talk asked about for that? That?
Can we talk about that for a quick
Who
second?
Who asked for that?
What the hell happened?
Mary, you just got out of a relationship. You were supposed to be making a dope album. You've been hurt, and now you want to ruin it all. Man, I can't believe her.
Crispy chicken lettuce wraps.
What?
Freshly.
That was that KFC situation. I was like, yeah, you messed up. You 0-2 right now.
Who asked for this? That's what I want to know. Who asked for this?
Bro, that was the worst situation ever.
I ain't heard not a question yet, and I already know it's terrible.
Yo, have y'all heard the panda song, the Hillary Clinton panda? Panda?
No.
No.
Did they just read
you
the panda?
It, bro. Yes.
And it's panda.
It's
panda.
It's the most amazing song ever, bro. Oh. And yes.
I love the
These are the moments
sometimes.
Where I'm like, yo, internet, you're killing it.
You're undefeated.
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, I forgot what we was on, but anyway.
Punch of the week.
That
Mary J. Yeah, Punch of the week. Mary J.
Blige. I'm not punching Mary J. Like, you're not going to tell me I'm punching
She's
Mary
too OG. You can't punch her?
Nah,
bro,
man.
I want to so bad.
I don't know
so
what
she's
doing a dance
I want to so bad. Yo.
So I heard music trivia. Yo, do you know where that came from?
What did that
Dancery.
Come from?
Yo, tune in, ladies and gentlemen. So apparently it was admitted that like she kept mispronouncing soiree in the booth every time she was singing that. And so apparently they like after she did it like 3 or 4 times, like the engineer and producer, they was Let's just it fits better like dancery in this like the line that it wrote it.
Dance soiree. Oh,
it's dance soiree.
Yo,
ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first.
That just blew my mind.
That is where that hateration and holleration
that just blew my mind
in this dance. Sorry.
Dance.
She created.
I'm only
bro.
Gonna hear Swari now. I'm
yes.
only gonna hear Dance Swari.
It's crazy. Yeah,
who presented Mary with Swari in R&B?
That's a bad lyric, though.
That's what I'm saying. Who presented her with that? I'd have been like, yeah, I'm changing this.
Do
to
they
dancer.
Know where she from? Do they know? Do they know?
You know the 411.
So who was your point? Your point?
Nah, I'm last. I still got to think.
Oh,
this
okay.
Thing.
Oh, we going around. Do you have yours?
Nah. It's not even real punch, but I do want to punch whoever's cast in Atlanta, the show, just to threaten them to get me on.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I just want
you
in.
You do deserve that. You deserve
I want in on
Shout
that.
Shout out to Black Justin Bieber, by the way.
That was the best.
I haven't seen. I got to watch this.
Side
watch
note.
This,
so I know that dude, which is crazy.
Really?
He looked familiar.
Like, I know him. Like, he's literally from here.
He just blew up all
oh,
over
he killed
Twitter.
That.
Well,
that
He was already gonna blow up because he is the son of a famous pastor here in Atlanta too. Actually, just,
wait a minute,
So yeah, but
is it Lil Yachty's brother?
It's not Lil Yachty's brother.
Oh dang!
No, it is not.
I gotta watch that. I gotta watch it, man.
Clarence.
It's worse.
So I don't really want to punch the people of Atlanta. I just want them to get them in a room and corner them and be like, "Let me in."
You just
want to
threaten them.
I want, you know, season two.
Basically, so you just want to give them. Well, I was gonna say you just want to give them the menacing like Beanie Siegel treatment, but that's a real beatdown that Beanie Siegel took.
I don't got hands like that.
Okay,
I ain't trying to do that.
Yeah, man. The game,
but,
and
but let me
game
in.
Got on Beanie Siegel's. He put the ones and twos on Benny?
So, you know, the game Meek beef been going on. Yeah, and then on the Meek single, Beanie Siegel did, on the Meek response to game, Beanie did a couple lines, but apparently he then, and so then game responded because game does not know how to not respond.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then in that conversation, in that, Beanie and him made up basically, and Beanie was like, look, I didn't know I was gonna be on that song. I basically showed up to write the homeboy's verse. I didn't know what it was about. So then Beanie was about to do the Bad Boy reunion show in Philly, I think, and then one of Meek's dudes just like knocked him out backstage. And then apparently it was before Beanie went out there. So apparently he got up and then went out and performed, which is a soldier.
Oh, weak knockout.
But nonetheless, man, job. This is what's happening. In the
that boy Meek got some, he got some shooters, I guess.
He got,
huh?
Some, yeah, he got some goals. Man, I would say, man, for my punch of the week, I don't know how I feel about hitting women, so I'll get my girl cousin to hit hit Kathy Miller, who is the Ohio Trump campaign chair, who said who said that there was no racism before Obama. I believe some of the other quotes were as follows.
What? She said this, bro.
If you're black and you haven't been successful in the last 50 years, it's your own fault. You've had every opportunity.
Now you can hit her, bro.
It was given to you.
You can hit her.
You've had the same schools everybody else went to. You had benefits to go to college that white kids didn't have. Please, you had all the advantages and didn't take advantage of it. It's not our fault, certainly. She called the Black Lives Matter movement a stupid waste of time. And said lower voter turnout among African Americans could be related to the way they were raised.
Oh gosh!
So being that she is from Ohio, I'm gonna give my.
What's that Kanye line? I never hit a girl, but I'll shake them.
That's Chris Tucker right there.
Yeah,
that's
Chris, yeah.
Chris, I think you definitely. I think you could trip her, bro. You don't have to punch her, but you can trip her, bro.
Throw a stick at her when she's rollerblading.
Put a stick in the spoke of the bike.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah. I can't. I'm trying to find a punch of the week at the last second. I can't.
You got nothing to hate.
Don't nobody.
I got a lot.
Show
of
walk
hate.
Around joyful.
Hate.
Most diabolical.
I ain't got nothing on me, man. But
yo, right. Force you hate. We don't want to force you to hate.
You got. Y'all have a great week. I guess is all I can.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was it. Off the record, one more for you in the books. Hit us up on Twitter. Definitely watch.
I got a punch.
Okay.
I'm gonna punch the belt line in his throat. Atlanta belt line.
Yeah, yeah.
So y'all, for y'all who don't live in Atlanta, y'all can read up on it. Because what's interesting is like maybe a month ago, the New York Times wrote a piece that was praising the belt line. They had a little attention grabber, not a clickbait, mm-hmm. that made it seem like they were going to criticize the Atlanta Beltline, but it had nothing but great things to say. But then now recently, it just found out the two of the founding members of the Beltline just quit, and there's a lot of controversial thoughts and questions and concerns to the direction of the Beltline and what it's truly going to become and what it's truly doing to Atlanta. And some of the founding members didn't feel. Like that they can honestly
support. They didn't want their hands getting dirty.
They didn't feel like they can support being a part of it in the direction in which it was going. So
yeah,
knowing that 5,000 plus homes were supposed to be given to
affordable
housing. Now, right now, it seems like they're on track to do like 200 or something like that.
Yeah. It's also very important to notice that like one of the people who stepped down from because both of them stepped down based upon like issues with inequality and inequity mm-hmm. on the Beltline. The one was the black dude who mm-hmm. was his sole idea with like, look, I'm trying to make sure this remains Absolutely. Reflective of the city as a whole. The second dude, who was actually the first dude, is the original found, like he created the Beltline.
Yes.
He is the one at Georgia Tech who initially had this idea, actually scoped this out while he was in school, and the city has adopted this.
Steve Jobs is like, you know what? I can't rock with Apple
anymore.
Yeah,
he's like basically like, look, this entire idea that I had for connecting the city in this unique way is being hijacked, and I need to fight against it, and I can't fight against it on the panel, on the council. So I'm withdrawing and going to go harder against this, which is
absolutely. Yeah. So there's an article, the Satora. How do you pronounce that? I know, Don. You probably anyway. There's a Satora report or something like that.
Uh-huh.
We could probably post it on our. But anyway, anyway,
that's your punch of the week.
That's my punch.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Off the record. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Peace.
Oh, also watch Dave.
October 2nd, 11:30 at Comedy Central, heart of the city.
Yeah,
I'll be there. Live tweet it if you want. I'm funny though.
Peace.
Make no mistake about it.